In conscious, in meditation, you don't cut out sensations. You do not cut out. No, the mind doesn't come in. The mind doesn't come in. The sensations, the senses are there, the brain is also active, but the mind does not come in. To cut out the interference of the mind, that is the action of meditation. In meditation, the sensations are there. In meditation, the... You don't. I would not call it a state of meditation. One may have. After all, when... How do you know there's consciousness? But consciousness will be there. Consciousness is not just mind. The sensations is also consciousness. The percept is also consciousness. It is the transferring of the percept into concept. It is that which is interrupted in meditation. Meditation is not just becoming absolutely blank, so that whatever may happen, and you have no sensations at all. No, your senses are very active, very alert. But in spite of the alertness of the senses, in spite of the alertness of the brain, the mind is quiet. That is really the state of meditation. The definition that is given of samadhi, samadhi which is the intense state of meditation, Patanjali in his Yoga Aphorism says, arthamatra nirbhasam, Swarupashunya, where you are aware of something that is formless. The awareness of the formless without any form, that is the highest state of meditation. There is awareness, but awareness of the formless. The forms have not been brought into existence at all. But we have not gone into the question of meditation. I'm just anticipating. A person in samadhi doesn't mean that you can put nails in his body and yet he is not awake, he is not aware. Then he is almost dead. Meditation is not a condition of induced death. Highly awakened, highly aware, and yet the mind not doing any interpretation. It is the mind that is quiet. It is true that the ordinary notion is that a person who is in samadhi is not aware of anything. He is aware, the awareness is there, but in spite of awareness there is no attention. The faculty of attention is quiet, awareness is there. Because if the awareness is not there, then the person is almost dead. No, that according to me is a mistaken idea of meditation. Yes? Interpretation. There is no interpretation by the mind. Yes?
No, of the concept are not so clear to me.
Concepts are what? Concept is a name. For example, chair is a concept, the mic is a concept, and at a higher level, the name that I give, not the name by which you are known in the society, but the name by which I give, so that for me, you are this. What are you? The name that I have given. How have I given the name? By interpreting all the percepts that have come to me. And therefore, your name may be something in society. For me, for my psychological understanding, your name is different. For me, that name is real. That other name is just a social identity. And so concept is the naming process. If you can look at anything without naming, then that is the highest state of awareness. But ordinarily, the moment I see something, I immediately name it. It is that entity which names, which is the mind. And therefore, when that entity is quiet, then only you will be able to see what is without modifying it in terms of your mental interpretations. Yes? We will know that because the storehouse of names is memory. From memory it comes. The moment I see an object, my memory is stimulated. And so this chair is not just the chair which everybody knows, but it's my private chair. It's my private house. Because that which is a chair, which is commonly known as chair, has been interpreted by me by giving a name, and that name has come from the memory of that chair. Memory is an important subject to be gone into. Because there are various types of memories. There is the retentive memory, there is the memory which is just the chronological memory, there is an associative memory, and associative memory develops into what is called the psychological memory. When I see the chair, immediately the association starts. And therefore, I do not know what the chair is, normally understood as chair, but I understand it in terms of the association that has started. And from that association develops the psychological memory. Oh, I must have this chair. Where is this chair? I'm lost without this chair because I have associated so many things out of my psychological memory. And the psychological memory comes into existence when the event ends, but the experience has not ended. The event is not in my hands. The events come and go. But round about the events are experiences, and my experience has remained unfulfilled. It is out of the unfulfilled experience that the psychological memory comes into existence. And by and large, we live by psychological memory. It is that which distracts us. It is that which does not allow us to meditate. It is that which does not allow us to see things as they are. Because the psychological memory comes and throws a sort of a veil over the object which I want to perceive. Of course, there is no pure emotion. All our emotions are associated with our mental concepts. There is no pure emotion. Emotion is associated with mental constructs. Just as there is no thought, which is just thought, Thought is also associated with emotion. And so we live in a thought-emotion world. Sometimes the thought may be subordinate, it may not be very strong, the emotion may be strong. Sometimes emotion may be subordinate and intellect or the thought may be predominant. But thought and emotion go together in our life, ordinarily. Even a scientist, when he discovers something, there is an emotion. In fact, today, there is a very beautiful book written by a scientist called The Subjectivity of Science. We had thought that science is absolutely objective. It is not objective. There is much of subjectivity that is involved in it. Subjectivity means the perceiver. The perceiver comes in and modifies that which he sees. And therefore the perceived phenomenon goes on even in ordinary man, but it goes on even in the scientist and the so-called intellectual man. We live by thought-emotion. Thought-emotion is the joint aspect which goes on in our consciousness. Sometimes the emotion is silent, it's not dominant. Sometimes the thought is silent, it's not dominant. Yes.
When we change our concept, is that a form of meditation? And when you really change your concept, when you look at something, you have your association, and you try to alter your concept, what's that?
That is what I have called in my talk the modified continuity. That which you consciously do, you change your concept. After all, it is still a concept. You have dressed up that concept in a different manner. You have only given different dress. It's only a modification. And I might consciously modify something for my purposes because it's better for me to have this modified concept.
But you can really change
that. You can't. You must get out of the whole phenomenon of concepts. That is a variation, in other words, psychological variation. That's a modification. When you talk of... You can change, your structure can change, your behavior pattern may change. But fundamentally you have not changed, your behavior pattern has changed.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, go on.
I think you get, when you do so, you can get a really other outlook.
Whatever you consciously do, there the continuity of the mind continues. Because the mind does something for its own motives. Good or bad, it doesn't matter. But it is the action of the mind. And whatever the mind does is within the field of continuity. You cannot step out of continuity so far as the mind functions. You may change your thoughts, you may change your concepts, you may change your ideals, but still it is within the field of the functioning of the mind. And the mind can function only in the field of continuity. What can you think about? You can think about only what you know. You can't think about something which you do not know. And therefore you are within the field of the known. Within the field of the known you may play about. You may change the dresses. You may bring about outer changes. But still you are within the field of continuity. And the experience of meditation is stepping out of the field of continuity. Change your projection.
Yeah.
Yes, but still it's a projection. How can you get rid? Can you consciously get rid of projections? In order to get rid of projections consciously, you will create another projection. And therefore the whole projecting activity of the mind must cease. We live in a projected world. I may change that world. I may say, oh, it's better looking, but still it is a projected thing. It is not intrinsic. Fears.
Well, when you say of I'm projecting, and then you start to, and you know that you're projecting on people bad things.
So?
So, and
you project something good.
Yeah.
So, but it's a projection. Your good is projection, your bad is projection. Both are projections. Projection can be good also. But it is still a projection, isn't
okay,
it?
But you get rid of fears.
Yes, but you may get rid of fears. You may get involved in something else.
Okay.
Get involved in something else. In order to get rid of fears, you get involved in something else. All right, I'm not afraid. I will do something else. I'm trying to forget the fear. You are suppressing the fear. Yes, you are forgetting it. But then why do you have to substitute by good? If it is dropped, it is dropped. You don't require a substitute. The fact that you transform this fear into something good.
I'm not transforming fear, I'm transforming the when I hate a person.
Yes.
I see if it's a projection, it's not good, I shall try to change it. Then
yes, but the projector is still there. The I am there.
But then, when you do so, you can, the result can be that you lost your fear. You really lost.
You have not lost. You have only kept back. The fear is there. You have only kept it back. It will not come up for the time being. You can keep it suppressed for some time by imposing something good. And that is the whole analysis of our psyche. Yeah?
If there is a solution.
There is a solution when that I, the projector, vanishes. That is why in meditation it is the I that must go. So long as the I is there, the I is meditating for its own purposes, good or bad. And therefore any action that is consciously done has a motive. And so long as there is a motive, it is not an unselfish act. It is for my continuation of that self. And therefore that self has to be completely broken up. That's what I said, you suppress it for some time. Yes, you can take a painkiller, it's all right, it's a painkiller. Yes, but you are not getting rid of. Yes, but we are not talking of painkillers. There are any number of painkillers.
When you feel good, it may have the same effect like painkillers. But sometimes, not I don't think you do, generally. Yeah, but let's say, try to see all people.
But why are you trying to see goodness in the man? Why are you trying? Can't you see it? But why do you want to try? It means you don't see it.
No.
You are trying to see it.
Yeah.
It's an effort. Why do I try? What? Because I will look better. People will respect me. People say you are a good. That, then why are you trying?
I learned very much from Mr. Conrad. So why should I go to this kind of lecture?
In order to break up the eye. That is a modified continuity about which I spoke. But the real truth comes only in the moment of discontinuity. Your projection, changing one projection into another projection, is still in the field of modified continuity. You are modifying it so that you can survive better, you can live better.
Okay, I live better.
Yes, that is all. But still I is there. It is that I that needs to be broken up.
Yeah, but when people go to lecture about which inspire people to...
Yes, but one lecture may inspire one person, that same lecture may not inspire the other person.
Okay.
Why?
Well, why should I go to a lecture?
No. Why should you... Yes, but lecture, going to the lecture is not a particular virtue. People go to lectures for all sorts of purposes. In order to forget something that is bad in the house, I go to the lecture. I go to religious sermon. Just going there is not a virtue at all.
Those lectures can have good influence, otherwise the lecture should be more if they have no value.
Yes, but lectures generally have that effect. You want to go again and again and again because it doesn't produce a permanent effect at all.
Yes, it's
a painkiller. It's a painkiller. For the time being, yes, your pain is killed. But again it comes up.
No, it is not a painkiller. When you really try to listen what the person is saying, that's very difficult.
Yes, but my objection is to the I. I am listening. So long as the I is listening, I is full of motives. And I may listen in order to survive, in order to continue.
Okay.
My interest in breaking up this I. Breaking up the I. So that I may listen to the lecture, but I can see the plant also. The plant is also a lecture to me. I need not go to a lecture. The tree lectures to me, and I'm able to listen to the lecture of the tree. But it is the I, and therefore the problem of problems is the I. And what is this I? Unless I understand this I, how has this I come into existence? Because I cannot break up the I. I say, I'll break up the I. You can't. Then you have only substituted another I. And most often we do only the substitution. Oh, like this is bad, I substitute with good. And therefore I need substitutes. I live in a world of illusion, projections. I may go to lecture. When the eye is broken, it doesn't mean that I don't go to lecture. I go to lecture, I go anywhere. But the motivation is not that by this lecture I am going to be benefited. By doing this I am going to be benefited. You may do it for the time being, so long as you need a painkiller. But in the ultimate analysis, this itself must go. The I itself must go, so that you don't need any. You don't need to go anywhere, and yet you can go anywhere that you like. Yes? Huh? I is the product of the mind. The mind has created the I. The I by which I go, the I which I want to protect, the I which I want to safeguard, is the creation of the mind itself. Because the mind can exist only in the field of continuity. And in order to continue, it creates the I. If I continue, then I'm all right, I'm safe. And therefore the mind, for the purposes of its own safety, creates this entity, the fictitious entity, which is the I. Yes, of course. The mind functions only for security, its own security. Mind does not want to die. Huh? I don't say you give up God, but why do you want God? What is your God? The God is also my creation. The mind has created a God for its own safety, for its own security. When that artificial entity goes, then you see God everywhere. In a leaf, in a tree, in man, woman, child. Then you don't have to go out in search of God, because you see God everywhere. Huh? The mind, that is what we are going into. That whole subject of meditation is there. Yes, yes.
You were speaking about the growth of consciousness. How must I see that the I is a necessary state in the growth of consciousness?
It is. I'm not saying it is not necessary in the growth of consciousness. Because the growth of consciousness, through that, it is the I that develops. But the time comes when even that growth of consciousness is dropped. Because the idea of the growth of consciousness, the consciousness has a duality, perceiver and the perceived. But ultimately the perceiver and the perceived both go, and so the whole consciousness goes. But in the initial stages, we go through this consciousness, the awakened consciousness. You become more and more aware of this duality in which you function. And therefore, in the initial stages, it is there. But if we are talking of spirituality, if we are talking of spiritual experience, then in that spiritual experience, there is no entity that becomes conscious of something else. Consciousness denotes a duality, the seer and the seen, the perceiver and the perceived. But in the ultimate analysis, the perceiver and the perceived both must go, so that the perceiver is not different. I am the perceived. I am. In one of the Hindu scriptures, which is called Ashtavakra Gita, which is another Gita, which is a dialogue between the teacher and the pupil, and the pupil says, "Sir, I want to be free. I want to break all my bonds. I want to be free." And the guru says, "But what is your bondage? Who binds you?" And there is a statement that it is your desire to meditate is your bondage. Desire to meditate. Because the desire to meditate denotes a duality. I am here, I want to go there. And therefore it is this duality which is your bondage. I don't say that you can, by giving up meditation also you are meditating in a different manner. And so it is not a question of consciously giving up meditation, but consciously to be free from that duality. Because it is duality which is the bondage. The duality is I and the other. I and the not I. That is the bondage. It is only the freedom from that duality which is the spiritual experience. Yeah. Huh?
When a spiritual man, is he then not sometimes kind of project an object for the other thing, for the other person?
The spiritual man is free from projections. He sees what is, he is not projecting.
No.
The other person. But who is the other person? The other person who is not spiritual. The other person who is not spiritual, of course he will go on continuing to live in his world of projections. But who is the other person? The other person who is not spiritual. The other person who is not spiritual, of course he will go on continuing to live in his world of projections. But the spiritual man is free from projections.
And the voice and the sound, are they also products of the mind?
Voice and the sound?
Yes. You said, the eye is a product of the mind. But what about the voice and the sound?
Yeah, the eye.
The eye.
I, not I, not I. Ego, yes, ego. The activity of consciousness ceases.
What case?
Huh?
What remains?
The mind wants to understand what remains. The mind cannot understand it. What remains, you will understand it when it comes. Otherwise, it will be only a projection.
Perhaps we want to make sure that something remains. When you develop your consciousness,
yes.
Does it always have to go from normal, paranormal, and then spiritual?
No, not necessarily. Yes. You don't have to pass through paranormal. From normal state you can go to the spiritual state. It's not necessary that you must pass through the development of paranormal consciousness. It's not necessary. It may come, that's a different thing, but you don't consciously develop it. No, there is no difference. If you have paranormal capacity, all right, very well. You have one more capacity, that's all. A person may not know typewriting, another person knows typewriting. Your paranormal faculty is like that. You have a capacity. It's not necessary that you must have. You have that capacity. You have an added capacity, that is all. But ultimately, all that has to go in order to come to the spiritual experience. You come back, and when you come back, because you have an added capacity, you are able to be more useful. What you have developed, that doesn't go to waste, but what you are developing must be dropped, must go, because your egoism is round about that, it must go. When you are free, the spiritual person is completely free. When he comes back to the world, he is able to use his capacity in a better manner. Huh? No. Yes, but why do you want to understand the spirit of the meaning of samadhi? Samadhi is the state where the I is gone. But we want to know just now, what will be that state when the I is gone? Let the I go, then you will understand, you won't have to ask questions. First of all, the I, which is the obstacle, must go. That is our primary interest. What happens after it goes, you leave it when that state comes. Because you cannot understand. Whatever we understand, try to understand, will be your projection. I will project a spiritual state. But no, the spiritual state can come only when all projections have ceased. Whether the projection is good or bad, it must cease in order to come to the spiritual experience. Yes? That is not that. Yama and Niyama is not for changing projections. Not for changing projections. That is not the purpose of Yama and Niyama. Yama Niyama really means, what are the habits which handicap you? Remove that. That is Yama.
Yes, actually, you do that, Maya.
Yes, yes.
Yes, but then you change your projections.
Yes, yes, you change your projections, but you are still projecting. I'm not. I said that you can bring about structural changes. Changing the projection is a structural change.
Yes.
In the ultimate, all projections must go.
Really,
it does not change. Outwardly, it changes. Behavior pattern is changed.
Yes.
By changing. No, nothing. There is nothing here. By changing the projections, you are changing the behavior pattern. The person is able to behave better. But what I am saying is, mere behavior pattern changing is not enough. You will be able to come to the changes of behavior pattern automatically when the being is changed.
Now you can change your negative in the very moment that you hate the person very much and you want to distract yourself. You can say, I don't. I go to the person. And then,
what?
Changing something.
But why? Why do you want to consciously change? There's a motive. There's a motive.
Because.
Why?
When a person distracts himself from the community, that's not good.
Yeah. So in order to satisfy what you call good, you have not gone into the question whether your good itself may be a projection. Here we are taught many things. In fact, to go on in life is to unlearn what we have learned. You cannot learn unless you unlearn. You have to unlearn many, many things. We all have to unlearn many, many things. Even then, why have I followed that direction? Why have I followed that man and the other person has not followed him? Yes, there's a choice, isn't it? I've chosen that man, the other person has chosen somebody else.
But there is something. Why should I not follow that man who kills person, but I choose the other one?
But who knows, perhaps your selection may be of a bad person. The bad and good is decided by you.
But I follow Hitler, I know that so.
But Hitler, there may be many, many silent Hitlers. We do not know. A person who is a silent Hitler, we may regard him as a good man and follow him. And so I can't depend upon my judgment that this is Hitler and this is not Hitler.
So what are you doing here?
What I am doing is go through all this process. I'm not sitting here as a teacher. I'm not giving a direction. I'm only saying, examine, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? What are your motivations? Why are you following one individual, not following another individual?
I ask myself, what is the use of the person's experience on the way to spirituality, when the person's experience is built up of events which are false?
Which are?
When events are false, not real.
Events are not thoughts.
False.
Events are false. Events are not false. My experience is false. Event I have not called, the event has come. The event is a reality, my experience is the false. To move from false to false, till I realize that it is false. Don't regard something as false because somebody has said it is false. I myself must awaken myself to the falseness. That is all. That is all the purpose of evolution. Because I may regard something as false because somebody has said that it is false. And I may be caught in another falsehood when I myself realize that it is false. But the question is, how does one come to that realization? That we shall see. I must come to my own realization. Even though it may be a very great man who says this is false. That is what Buddha said. Don't follow me. Because I am saying this. Don't do it because I say it. Don't believe because I say it. Find out for yourself. And that is all that we are talking about. Find out for yourself that it is false. Even though 1,000 people say it is not false, I find out for myself that it is false. But how do I find out? By what method? By what process? It is that which we are examining.
We live with opinions.
Yes.
That's a different world.
No. It may be opinions, it may be convictions. But how have I come to that conviction? By what process have I built up those convictions? In other words, we are not concerned with what to do and what not to do, but why do I do this and why do I not do this? This is a psychological process, not a moral process. We are not going along the moral road, we are going along the psychological road. Why do I do this? Or why do I not do this? But in morality we are told, do this and don't do that. We are not following that path. We are trying to understand why. Why do I want to be good? What is good? Why do I want to be good? Is it unconsciously that I seek respect of other people? If I am good, people will respect me. There may be all sorts of conscious or unconscious motivations. To go into it, to find out what these motivations are, and therefore to find out for oneself what is false. When I find out something which is false, it will drop away. It will drop away. I don't have to struggle against it. It will drop away by itself. And therefore, our concern is to find out for ourselves what we call false, what we call good, what is false, to find out for ourselves. That means we must become our own teachers. We don't have to depend upon somebody else to teach us. That is all. That is the path that we are trying to understand. All right, then, we meet tomorrow at 10 o'clock.